Rocco, you're supposed to bring champagne. What the hell happened?
I thought you were bringing it.
You're so cheap, it's unbelievable. It really is. Where's my coffee? Champagne? Nothing. What are you bringing to the table here?
Well, I mean, the usual. My charming personality.
Oh, that's it. You're oozing that.
My sense of optimism.
Absolutely.
I
feel it.
I mean, we could have bought champagne.
What would we do with it? Drink it or throw it on you?
I mean,
you.
I'm looking around the studio. There's a whole lot of space here.
Would they be mad? We did it? They wouldn't care.
I don't know. I don't think they'd care. Congratulations to the Toronto Blue Jays, who did nothing to clinch. That's not true.
No, they did.
They had the.
They swept the Red Sox.
Yeah. They swept the Red Sox after having the a playoff spot clinched thanks to a Baltimore Orioles loss during their off day. I'm going to read you some numbers.
Let's hear them.
This series, this three-game sweep, the Jays outscored the Red Sox 25-3. For the year, the Jays finished 16-3 against the Red Sox. They outscored them 125-55. Oh, good. The fire alarm's on.
That's awesome. Keep reading. Nobody
they outscored the Red Sox 125-55. There's nobody in this building anyhow.
Except us.
Give me a fire extinguisher. I'll put the damn thing out. They outscored the Red Sox 125. Boy, stay hot. 125-55. And they outhit the Red Sox 218-155.
Buffalo wants to run.
It's the most hits. Of course he does. Okay. It's the most hits against one team in a single season. Any moment now, we're going to hear the voice from God come over the line telling us.
Yeah.
Coming over the background telling us that, you know, things are being investigated.
What should we do?
So there you go. This is the... Ignore it. This is a situation. It's like in a hotel. When the fire alarm goes off in a hotel, I'm not leaving. I don't care. I'm not leaving my room. I don't care. I do not care.
I care a little.
I'm never leaving a hotel in the middle of a fire alarm. You're not catching me in my pajamas outside. Come and get me in my room if it's
Blair
that bad.
Running out in his little tidy whities, cheek to ear. That's a fire.
So this much we know after the weekend: the Blue Jays will either.
I can't think.
The Sorry. Blue Jays will either. You know, now you got me all confused. The Jays can't finish any lower than second place in the wild card race.
Yes, that's a great point.
So they're either going to host the Rays, they're going to host the Mariners, or they're going to go to Seattle. One thing that is off the table is they will not be going to Tampa to play the Rays in the first round, and they will not be going to Cleveland to play the Guardians. Even Kiprios is here.
He's not running either.
They won't be going to Cleveland to face the Guardians.
That's good or bad?
That's really good. Although, I fail to, you know, the whole social media, yee-haw, we're not going to the Trop. Why are you worried about going to the Trop? I'd rather play the Rays than the Mariners. I have any idea why anybody wants to play the Mariners. I'd rather play the Rays.
There's many ways you can go about this. I think if you're happy and you're looking at big picture, you want the Jays to be at home, which it looks like they're going to be. If they win 2 out of 3, I think they got
magic numbers too. Any combination of Jays wins and Mariners losses will give the Jays home field advantage. The Mariners have an extra game. They got 4 games against the Detroit Tigers, including a doubleheader tomorrow.
Yeah, but it's Barrios and Mitch White and Yusei Kikuchi. The boy just oozes 2 out of 3, don't it? Isn't that what it is?
For the Orioles.
Boy, I just lose this 2 out of 3 for the Jays.
So basically it's Barrios and 2 bullpen days.
There you go. Well, I mean, depends on how Barrios' curveball looks and the fastball command and the two-seamer into righties. But, look, the way you see the Jays now and the competitive at-bats that they have and the way the pitchers, at least the starters that matter for their team, the ones that's going to throw in me the most, the way they're efficient – they're averaging about 16 pitches per inning. Mm-hmm. They're throwing strike one about 65% of the time, all three of them. They're
when they're, you know, most of the time with two strikes, they're competitive. Their takes are harder, right? You want to be competitive. They don't give up too many hits with two strikes, which in the playoffs, that's a big deal. You want to go deeper. You want to, you know, be quick in and out. It's the Tim Mesa effect when he's facing Aaron Judge. Four pitches and I'm out, right? It's action, action, action. That's how you go deeper. So they're doing that, the three guys that matter. And their lineup just looks tougher to get out. Now, I know it's the Red Sox and – but you still got to go out there and have competitive at bats and take that close one to get yours. And it just looks like whenever Teoscar and some guys at the bottom of the order are doing that, take a little bit of pressure off the top three or four guys in your lineup to not always have to do it. I think that's the reason why this lineup at the beginning of the year, everybody was oozing and on and can't wait to see what they're going to bring. And when it's looking like it's looked the last three games, I think now you're understanding why everybody's so excited about the Blue Jays lineup.
6-3 was the final score yesterday. 10-0 on Saturday. 9-0 on Friday.
That's annoying, by the way.
10-0 at what the score? Relax. It's just a flashing light. It's not that big a deal. It's not like it's a strobe light. I mean, you're the former player. Block it out. You had people yelling at you, telling you you suck. So focus on this. Never mind the little flashing.
People in this room tell me that.
Yeah, that's true.
I block you out all the time.
Yeah. Well, as I said, the Jays celebrated hard Friday night and then no hangover Saturday, 10-0. Ross Stripling, his fifth scoreless start. Bo Springer, Hernandez, Jansen, 14-17. 14-17 in that 10-0 win. Here we are, three games left in the regular season. And this team is scoring runs in bunches, and I'm not going to turn, and we're not going to pick on Vladdy here, but nobody's even mentioning Vladdy for the most part here. You know, the storyline right now is are guys like Whit Merrifield, the bottom of the order, Danny Jansen, and Kevin Teoscar Hernandez, his two home runs yesterday to different parts of the park. In his last 11 games, I'm just looking at this, in his last 11 games now, Teoscar is something like 341, 350 in his last 11 games. He has had two four-hit games since September 20th. Those are the only four-hit games he's had.
Yeah, he's seeing the ball better. He's not drifting. Drifting means you're sort of your lower half's out in front of your upper half. It's not connected, so you can't have the separation. He's seeing the ball quicker, which allows him to process quicker. His, you know, little kryptonite is the slider away. The sooner he can see that thing, the better chance he's got of laying off that. His knee turn is shorter. When it's longer, what happens? His eyes follow his knee, which means now he can only see the ball with one eye, and he tends to have a little sit and spin on his backside, which he doesn't have anymore, and that allows him to keep his shoulders square. When his shoulders are square, and I've told you this since the first time I saw Teo take batting practice and hitting balls in the flight deck in right center field at the Rogers Center, he's got more power than anybody on that team. And you could argue in baseball, he can change the game because he can go line to line. And when they have him doing the things that he's doing now, which allows them obviously to make it a little easier to put him in the five hole and move Chappie down to the six hole, he's a game changer, right? All of a sudden now you got five guys, one through five, who can do damage and change the game with one swing instead of two or three hit or miss kind of things. And they're going to have that. I know we haven't mentioned Vladdy in the first 8 minutes because of the buzzer going off and everybody else doing their thing.
Because everybody else is doing their thing.
Everybody else is doing their thing. But that's got to change in the playoffs. Vladdy's going to have to do his thing. I mean, he's going to have to be an aircraft carrier. I think he'll again, it's 1-for-4 with a 2 RBI double. It's not 3-for-4.
Yeah, but
that's what you're asking
for.
That
doesn't necessarily make you an aircraft carrier.
Sure it does. When you're hitting third and teams are trying to not let you beat them, that's doing some things.
We'll be joined by Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet at 10:30. 11:30, John Schneider, Blue Jays manager, joins us for his weekly hit from Baltimore ahead of the first of three games between the Orioles and Jays tonight.
Well, it wouldn't be our show if I didn't bring this up, too. It's funny how much harder you see Teoscar playing and running the bases. When he's, what was the numbers you mentioned in the last 15
like
games?
341 his last 12 games.
Yeah, it's amazing how healthy, how healthy he looks when he's raking.
Yeah.
That's funny how that
and
works,
how engaged he looks.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It is remarkable. That foot doesn't seem to be bothering.
Does it?
No. Foot seems to be okay. Whit Merrifield, Kevin. He's hitting 10 of 11, 421, four doubles, four home runs, nine RBI. Santiago Espinal, we're led to believe, will play during this series against the Orioles. He went to the All-Star game as a second baseman. But for me, Kevin, barring injury, Whit Merrifield has to start. He has to be my starting second baseman in game one of the of the ALDS.
No question. I mean, that's without a doubt. If John Schneider tells you anything, he will play the hot hand. He's not afraid to mix up the lineup and move guys around. And unless you're George Springer, maybe the first three guys, even Vladdy and Bo, he's moved them around.
Yeah, so the one guy Springer, hasn't moved around is Springer.
Well, obviously, because he makes 150 large, and it'd be very hard to do that, even if he was struggling. But, yeah, you're playing the hot hand. And are you okay with him playing second? I am, right? It's even if Santi comes back and plays 3 days in a row and plays, you know, 27 innings and gets four or five hits, are you still playing Whit Merrifield? I am. It just seems like he's – you know, he is an educated guesser, and he guesses location a lot. You can tell you watch his at-bats. It doesn't take a brain surgeon to watch his at-bats and see that when he takes pitches down the middle, it's because of why he's not swinging at that, right? I'll give you an example. It's like when he hit the home run, the guy threw him a ball away for strike one. Hee-haw. If I'm stepping out and I'm a smart dude and I've watched enough video, probably not going to double up on that. He's probably going to go away in. I'm looking in. I'm not looking fastball. I'm looking in. Once you get an elevated heater, it was like 91, 92 miles an hour. He gets a head out. He hits a homer. It's those kind of things. And I think now he's just a little bit more refined with that, and he doesn't have the slide. Right. Sometimes he gets a little wiggle and his swing looks like a worm. You know, when a worm is moving around, his swing sort of looks that way, where his elbows are rocking back and forth. Now he's got a little bit better connection, a little bit better separation. And I think that's a connection of a couple of things. He's more consistently playing. He knows that he doesn't have to go and look at the lineup card to know he's going to play, which is a big deal. And he's got a little experience. He's very athletic. He's a smart dude. You see the plays he makes. He has instincts, which you can't teach those. Those come with experience. And I think in a playoff hunt with who you have playing shortstop, and, you know, we saw that play, the ricochet off of Bo, that he sort of did the half dive, and then he makes the play and throws a guy out at first base. I'm not saying Espinal can't do that, because Espinal's a great defender.
Right.
But I'm saying you got to be in that position, right? You got to put yourself there. You got to back up the play. Now, it helps when you're raking.
Let me ask you this.
But I like him playing second in the playoffs.
Let me ask you this about Whit Merrifield, because he's a guy got a pretty good track record. This has not been a good year for him until the trade to Toronto. It was not a good year for him. He came over to the Blue Jays, was forced into a bench role, and
forced is strong.
Yeah, well,
he wasn't hitting.
Yeah, so it made it exactly. Easier. Well, and he's pardon me. He was also, you know, second base. Santiago Espinal was the second baseman at that time. So that's right. I shouldn't say forced into a bench role. Taking a bench role, and you've talked about this. It's not an easy thing to do, to come off the bench.
Not used to it.
But now he's on, I don't know if I call it a heater, but he's certainly on something of a roll now. Is it possible that may have helped him as a hitter?
Playing more?
No, taking that time off or having that reduced workload and then coming back and playing more. In other words, it's like my bad year was interrupted. Now I'm going again things seem to be going my way.
I can only speak from experience. I think you have a different voice, the different organizations that you go to. No organizations all speak the same language. They just don't.
Right.
You're getting a different way of speaking it. Now, it is see ball, hit ball. So that thing is sort of the same exact kind of thing. It's the mechanics part of it. It's how you refine being that educated guesser on location. It's how you do that between the times you're playing. A guy's went down. Now I get to play more. So I can sort of mesh all those two things together. You know, you may do more T work. You may do less T work. I know he's a big T guy, right? It's that the coil of his swing has to be there so he's able to stay through the ball, keep his barrel in the hitting zone where the ball will go where he wants to go. If the ball's away, I want to hit the right center. I got to stay through it. The coil of his swing has to be good. So the sway's not there. The sway is, I think, further to your point, it's the more you play, the more swings, the more at-bats you have, everything's going to be better. It just will be. But you have to have an organization that's buying into you're a good player enough that we're going to give you a chance, even though we're trying to make a playoff spot here, to give you a chance to figure it out because of the track record. Like I think that's what it is.
When you think about it from Whit Merrifield's point of view, here's an organization that has to make the playoffs, that has made the playoffs now, but you joined an organization who's, they had to make the playoffs. And you were joining an organization that had an all-star at second base.
Yeah.
And, you know, an outfield that generally is pretty set. Give or take, the George Springer's move into DH. And if I'm Whit Merrifield and I wake up this morning, I'm feeling pretty good about myself because that organization that had all that going on has taken on a guy from a team that stunk, who wasn't having a very good year, and they've put me in a responsible position.
Pressure, expectations to come from a stinky team to one of the best teams in baseball, and you can't afford to stink for very long. Like, you got to figure it out. If you don't figure it out, you ain't playing. Like, John Snyder's basically told these guys without telling them by the way he writes out the lineup that if you ain't playing well, you ain't playing. So I give him credit. You know, he sort of got a little Danny Jansen in him when he sees the guy in front of him doing as well as he's doing. There's some urgency there to figure it out quicker. What am I doing wrong, and I need to fix this quicker so I can play more, so I can help this team go to where they want to go is kind of cool to watch.
Do you ever find yourself wondering what Danny Jansen's year would have been like if he'd been healthy?
Offensively. You're talking maybe hit 30? I don't know.
I don't know.
Does he have pop to hit 30?
I don't know.
I do think that he's hitting the breaking ball better. Because, you know, just sort of like whenever a team that's facing you sees changes, you're widening out. I mean, he says it out loud at all. I'm trying to do some baseball.
Exactly.
Look how close I'm standing to the plate. Yeah. Where they're going to see if you can hit a heater in. I mean, that's the first thing. The first time you see a guy crowd the plate, okay, can you get the head out?
Yeah.
So they're finding out if he can do that. Now they know he can do that. Now what they start doing, in fastball counts, they start flipping it. Now he is hitting at the bottom of the order. Now he did hit 6 yesterday, but mainly he's at the bottom 3. Right, he usually doesn't hit 6. The playoffs will be interesting to see where he's hitting.
Well, it's going to depend a lot. It's going to depend on Alejandro. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things.
There's a lot.
Right.
There's a lot going into that. So it is very interesting to see him starting to hit the breaking ball better. You know, him going the other way is by accident. He's not trying to do that. I mean, it's fun for him to come out.
He's told
and say,
us that. Yeah, yeah.
It's fun to see him do that. But that's an accident. Woo. Like, you know, you're sort of, I got one idea and I'm either late or I'm out in front of a breaking ball. And it just say how it happens, goes over there because I have tons of confidence and I'm mechanically sound right now. Again, I'm going to go back to the thing. I just think the Alejandro Kirk in front of him, Danny Jansen started the season as the number one catcher. By the second month of the season, he was not.
Right.
And you see Kirky doing that. I've been in that role. I know how that feels. You better figure it out, dude. Because they're talking about trading you because you got a guy that's better than you that's in front of you.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. I think that gets back to sort of all these guys that are fighting for playing time. You go in the cages, you go home, look yourself in the mirror and go, man, this dude's figured it out. Maybe I need to also. And I just like the way he's, you know, he has better rhythm with his hands. I know he's wider based, which helps him have a little flatter bat path, but you can tell the rhythm. He has flow to his hands, right? When you're that wide, you sort of lose your lower half. Now you're trying to just drop barrel to ball. That's all you're trying to do, right? Because you stand so close to the plate and the guy's gearing it up. So you're just trying to drop it. You got to have good flow to your hands. You got to be able to know where the barrel's at. And if you don't know where the barrel's at, you're going to be out and around. You're not going to hit the ball as hard as you want to hit it. So, yeah, he's going to be hard to keep out of the lineup. And that's an interesting question on what do you do. Can you play him and Kirky at the same time is the question.
I think if you do that, you almost have to have Moreno on your roster.
There has to be a just reason. Does he justify a reason?
And you made this point. That will come down, I think, largely to Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s health.
Yep.
If Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s in the lineup, then perhaps you don't have Danny Jansen in the lineup in days when he isn't.
How can
catching.
You not have him, though? Like, you want your best lineup on the field.
Yep.
If you got Luis Castillo, when hits are going to be hard to come by.
Yeah. We haven't talked about Kevin Gausman yet. He left yesterday's game in the third inning with a cut on his middle finger. John Schneider saying afterwards that had it been a playoff game or even a game earlier in the regular season, they probably would have let him go. Now, a couple of things to keep in mind. It's the middle finger for Kevin Gausman is an important finger given that, well, it's important for every pitcher, every right-handed pitcher, but it takes a lot of the pressure for his splitter. And this is something that he's had to deal with blisters in that finger a lot. He's got a whole routine, a finger care routine.
Yep.
And everybody seems to think that this will be okay. Obviously, the proof will be in the pudding. I will say this, though. The fact that it's a cut as opposed to a blister might be a better thing. Your level of concern, 1 to 10?
0. He'll figure it out. He's been there before. He's had this before.
He could be looking at 6 days off.
Yeah, game two.
Game two is Saturday.
Yeah, him and Ray. He'd get Robbie Ray probably.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, you talk about pitching. If you're a fan of baseball.
Robbie Ray got lit up yesterday. He did not look good.
Well, he ain't burying the slider. When you don't bury the slider in your helm.
Yeah.
He's added a two-seamer, though. It's going to be a little different element, and the Blue Jays haven't seen him since that. So it's, again, having all this lineup with the way the Blue Jays are tougher outs is going to be a big deal. But the Kevin Gausman thing, look, they're going to do all they can do to figure it out. And you know, when I was playing, it was super glue. Super glue it up and, you know, take it off after a couple of days and it would be normal. I mean, they got all technology to figure it out. Yeah. They're going to laser it and they'll do whatever it takes.
I wonder if there isn't a possibility, too. And this might play into the Blue Jays' hands in some way. If you have Alek Manoah going in game one of the playoffs, which it now appears as if John Schneider is essentially said, well, they're going to have Alek Manoah in game one of the postseason. You win that game. If there is at all any concern about Kevin Gausman, you may go with Ross Stripling in game two for a couple of reasons, not the least of which that lines up Kevin Gausman for the first start of the next series. That's a lot of time off for Kevin Gausman, though, right? If you're talking about pitching Sunday,
but he's not a location guy. He's a stuff guy. I don't think that'll help.
Okay.
I don't think so. Again, I think
because you're looking at basically seven. If he pitches Sunday, if the series goes, you're probably looking at 7 or 8 days off.
Yeah, I'm not thinking that's. I mean, velocity, movement. Does he rely on movement? Now he relies more on the steering wheel, the middle finger, to have the splitty and the slider go where the splitty and slider are going to go.
You'd be okay playing games with his rest days.
Is
with
that
Kevin
overthinking
Gausman.
It though?
Yeah.
If I got a chance to do some, just standing on their neck, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
You? Why would you take a chance?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of being
cute.
Of getting cute.
That's cute.
I'm not a fan of getting cute by any stretch of the imagination.
Because you know Robbie Ray's going to be fired up, man.
Yeah. But,
so,
I mean, Robbie Ray.
I'd rather have my best.
Robbie Ray can be fired up all he wants.
Well, when the slider's working, he's a tough
kid. It wasn't working yesterday.
Okay, that's against Oakland. That's not against the Blue Jays.
Yeah, but so.
It's the Blue Jays, not Oakland.
Yeah.
Like, and it's a playoff game.
Yeah. What does Bo Bichette have to do to get talked about? I mean, this is just accepted.
I think the less you talk about them, that means they're really good, right?
It's funny. I saw that Jason Stark did his picks. You know,
for what?
For awards. And he listed the 10.
Bo's getting one?
10 players. No, he had 10 players he listed for most valuable player. Bo was the Blue Jay that was on that most valuable player list.
Well,
he's not going to be in the conversation in the Yale most valuable player.
No, no.
But it pretty hard to not say that he has turned into their most valuable position player this year, Kevin. This is 2 months now.
Well, you said it was Chapman earlier. It's not him anymore. It's not
probably
Vladdy.
It's not Vladdy.
Not Vladdy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Springer. I mean, there is nobody else.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, you could argue him and Manoah.
Are you surprised that he's been able to keep, that Bo has been able to keep this up now?
Not really.
We're talking 2 months, basically. Six weeks, basically.
A lot of people handle pressure differently. There's a lot of pressure on that dude to live up to arguing about a contract in the offseason, spring training, you're yelling and screaming back from your organization.
Well, he wasn't yelling.
Well, yeah, you know what I mean. Like, there was some
I should get more money.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. And then coming into the season, you're expected from the get until the end to be one of the best players in baseball. It's a lot of pressure. Like, there's other teams that you're facing and other players that are really, really good. And there's a track record on you. And I do think the ups and downs of trying to be a better shortstop has hurt him offensively. You've mentioned this before. Should he pay more attention to his offensive side of the ball?
Yep.
He's basically shown us that. Like, he's went in cages. You can tell the way he takes pitches.
Yet his issues now. Issues now are defensive.
What would you rather have? Would you rather have an occasional throwaway, a weird angle body throw, or him going 3-for-4 with 2 RBIs? I know what I'd like.
Can I ask you this? Is this what we should expect from Bo defensively?
I think so.
Going forward.
How can they get better?
I'm asking. I don't know. And I mean, I'm prepared to live with it. But
Trey Turner comes here, he'd be playing second.
Yes. If anything, this year has shown two things. One, it's really, I'm sorry, that this last 2 months has shown two things. One, it's really reestablished Bo's value. Two, I think it's opened the discussion again about possibly going to second base if you get one of those premier shortstops.
But it really is true. You can't teach experience. I mean, there's so many ground balls you can take off a machine on one knee and backhanding with the waffle mitt. I mean, all that's cool and it's fun and it helps a lot. But to actually get out there and do it and all the angles and the pressure of the guy running, big time play, that guy's on the ropes, that play has to be made. Unless you actually are doing it a lot. And Bo's going through it now, right? He is the quarterback on the field. He's going through.
I think Matt Chapman's kind of the quarterback.
I don't know.
I think Matt Chapman's the guy.
I think it'll always be. I mean, he helps, right? He's sort of the security blanket for everybody in that infield. But I think it's still Bo. I understand. And especially next year when there's no shift, it's really going to be Bo. If nobody else comes here, it's better than Bo, and he's still playing short. I just think it's that experience thing. The more experience he gets, make the routine play all the time. How can he do that? Can he get better at that? Yes or no? I hate to say all the time because he's a human being, but you want to be great, not good. You got to make it all the time.
I don't know if at this point a guy can get better at the routine play. You've seen a lot of routine plays by now in your career, right?
What's routine with no shift?
Well,
that's a question.
That's a fair point. What we consider routine now may not be routine next year. Routine next year is going to be what we kind of grew up with as a routine play for shortstop. And it's entirely possible.
Moving side to side, making the throw and the run.
Maybe that plays into Bo's wheelhouse a little more. I don't know.
Freeze him up to not be so, you got this spot, I got this spot. How dare I come to your spot? There's a little of that confusion sometimes.
Yeah, it may make a little difference. But all that aside, the narrative around Bo Bichette serious consideration given to trading Bo. I don't think there ever was, but the fact that people were even entertaining that as a possibility, something that would have been unthinkable a year ago, I think showed you just, and Bo admits
he wasn't really good at the time.
He admits that he was not good at the time.
No. Yeah.
And he's admitted that. He's admitted he's shut out the outside noise. And
has he
just focused on, I think he has just focused on going, getting back to what he was doing and trusting his 2-strike approach. I think that set everything up for him.
He
went back and you pointed out when he did it, he went back, trusted the 2-strike approach. And the most important thing is had success doing it right away. And one thing about Bo, if it's working, he ain't going to change it. Once it started working,
it frees him up to take the big daddy hacks. It really does. Like the hack that the helmet's flying off and the hair's cool. It frees him up to do that because he knows he's got that blanket to just lean on. 2 strikes. I'm a tough out. I can let the ball travel. I can hit velocity with the 2-strike approach. No leg kick.
Kevin, he's leading.
I love it.
He was going into Sunday leading the American League in hits.
I love it.
Who's leading the American League in hits?
He's getting to the point in the playoffs where you'd pitch around him. Two pitch to Vladdy.
That was my next. Well, we'll have plenty of time to talk about it.
Well, you heard me say that. Pitch to Vladdy.
Yeah.
Yeah. How dare I say that? But yeah.
Well, we've already had Aaron Judge Aaron Boone decide that he'd rather pitch to Vladdy than Alejandro Kirk, right? He came out and said it. Dan Shulman is our Blue Jays voice on Sportsnet. He will be calling the Blue Jays series for ESPN Radio. Dan Shulman joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360. Hello, Mom. And wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Starting Monday, be sure to tune into the J.D. Bunkus podcast. Weekday mornings at 9 on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. The fire alarm has stopped.
I was distracted.
Adrian Award on Twitter says, in regards to not wanting to leave your hotel room during a fire alarm, it's actually better to stay in your room these days, as long as the fire isn't in your room, obviously. That's pretty good if the fire's in the room.
What if you have to jump?
Jumping.
And if you would have just left when it first started, you wouldn't have to jump. How about that? I'm asking.
I've spent a lot of time in hotel rooms on the road. You know if there's a serious fire in your hotel.
How do you know?
You know.
Does it sound different?
Does it buzz
different?
You know.
Is it louder?
You know.
How do you know?
You just know. You have a second sense about
this. Oh, you do?
Yeah.
What? Really?
Yeah. Absolutely. If you don't smell smoke, you don't leave. If you don't smell smoke, you don't leave your room.
Like, what? You're on the first floor, and it happens on the 15th floor.
Well, that's
now
all right.
What?
If I'm on the first floor, I got no problem. I'll walk out.
Oh, so you'll leave?
Yeah. First thing I do is I go up and check and make sure the concierge lounge is okay in the Marriott. And if there's nobody in the concierge lounge, that's where you hang out for the fire. I mean, they're firemen for a reason. I mean, they got all those ladders. If they're going to have to come get you, they're going to have to come get you. Let's bring in Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet, who will be calling the Blue Jays series, whoever it's against, wherever it is, for ESPN Radio. Danny, thanks very much for joining us. Give me your gut call on who the Jays will be playing on Friday and where they will be playing. And I won't hold you to it, although our listeners probably will.
I will.
Well, the math suggests at home to Seattle. That's the most likely situation. So I think I will go with that.
You good with that?
You know, I'm very selfish, so I'm good with them starting at home. October is generally a month of travel for me,
right.
You know, going right through the end of the World Series for ESPN Radio. So getting days at home to be with my family and to call Blue Jays games, that's a bonus. So, I'm good with that. I would love to be on the 300 level of the Rogers Center on Friday.
From the Jays' point of view, I would think they would be okay with that. Would they, or would you rather have the Rays? See, I'd rather have the Rays.
I believe in the baseball gods and not trying to overthink it. And I think you take, you know, you can't control who you're going to play. So I don't think you should worry about who you're going to play. Once you know who you're going to play, then figure out how you're going to try to beat them. But I think the Blue Jays just need to keep the train on the tracks. They're playing well. Win the game that's in front of them, secure home field, and see who the opponent is. You know, neither's going to be easy. They're both good teams, and Seattle's going to bring in Castillo, Ray, Gilbert, and maybe a soft-tossing lefty in Marco Gonzalez, and we know what those lefty changeup guys can do to this lineup for whatever reason. And then Tampa Bay's got McClanahan. Glasnow has shown up again, right? He might be available in a limited role. Jeffrey Springs, who's like, you know, the same kind of guy as Marco Gonzalez, another guy who can give him fits. Drew Rasmussen is good. I'm with you. Maybe the Rays would be a bit of an easier matchup, but honestly, if I'm the Blue Jays, until you know who you're going to play, I just worry about the Blue Jays.
If Brias is on your roster, obviously he will be. Would it be a little easier to use him out of a pen at home?
you think?
It's not something I've thought of. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a challenge for him to come out of the pen if he's needed, to be honest with you, because it's not like he's coming in the eighth inning with runners at first and third, you know, right? So he's coming in if something happens early to one of the starters, and he won't come in the middle of an inning. Phelps or Pop or somebody will come in and get out of that, and then Berríos will have 15 minutes to warm up for the next inning. So I don't know. That's a good question, Kevin. I don't know if I think it makes a difference if it's home or road. And listen, we've seen both Jose Berríos's this year. He's likely to come in and throw four great innings. Like, we have no idea, right? So I don't believe. Well, he's supposed to start tonight, so he's obviously not starting in the wild card round. But he should be on the roster. He should be the long man. You know, the game. Remember, extra innings is legit extra innings, right? No runner at second or anything, right? So if a game goes 11 or 12 or whatever, he could be in there then. And if they advance, he's the fourth starter, which means he could be the game one starter of the division series if they go three and the other three guys start those games. Like, if they're going to have a deep run, Jose Berríos is going to be a part of this.
Yeah, the playoff roster is intriguing. You know, I think it's basically a slam dunk for a couple of guys, and that would be Moreno and Zimmer. Who do you think makes it out of those two guys?
Well, I'm going to backtrack on something I said to you last week.
Okay.
So you can scrub it off the website or whatever. So last week I said to you, I don't think the Blue Jays have done this dance with Bradley Zimmer all season long to not take him. Mm-hmm. And I think I've changed my mind, and I've changed my mind for a couple of reasons. And it's funny. I think Danny Jansen has actually hurt Bradley Zimmer here, because Jansen is hitting so well, he's got to be in the lineup. He's got to, I think. Game one, Manoah pitches, Kirk catches. And maybe it depends who they play, but if they get Shane McClanahan, like, for sure Danny Jansen's in the lineup. And even if it's Luis Castillo in Seattle, a righty on the mound, I think Jansen's going to get some DH at-bats in this series. Mm-hmm. And we know Kirk is going to get some DH at-bats in this series. So if your other catcher is DHing two of the three or all three, that increases the likelihood in my mind that you want a third catcher.
Yep.
You know, Zimmer and Bradley, it's good to have both of them. You can really shore up your outfield defense. Zimmer obviously is your best bet to score from first on a double, score from second on a single if you're using him as a pinch runner, that sort of thing. But, you know, it's the way Jansen's hit, and it's seeing Moreno out there taking ground balls and fly balls the last couple of days at 3 o'clock at the ballpark. Mm-hmm. I think they're just trying to get him as ready and as versatile. Like, I think he's going to be kind of the emergency guy for them. He's a good athlete. And you know, the other part of it, too, I think, is Whit Merrifield's play. Like, he's the second baseman right now. Mm-hmm. And so Cavan Biggio might be the pinch runner late. Like, they're going to have to run for Kirk at some point, probably down a run in the eighth or ninth inning. Then they can have and the extra innings rule, too. What if you don't have if you lose your DH because you got to make your other, you know, you got to put your other guy behind the plate, and now you've got four, five, six innings of baseball left to cover, two, three at bats where you've lost your DH. So I've changed my mind. I think Zimmer might be out, and I think Moreno might be in.
Yeah, I think, you know, having you walk through it that way with us, and yeah, it makes, I'm with you as well. I was kind of on the fence, but seeing what Danny's doing, knowing how John manages the team. And I guess a lot will depend, too, on Santiago Espinal and Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s availability, too. That will have a significant role in that decision-making. But, yeah, I think it's, you know, you have to ask yourself, what else does Bradley Zimmer give you other than the best part of his skill set? And almost everybody else on the roster at least has two things they can do for you. You know what I mean? There are two things you can utilize them for. So I'm with you. But, yeah, Whit Merrifield, Dan, what to your mind explains what we've seen from Whit Merrifield?
So I guess we give him, you know, he's always been an everyday player, and he's never been traded before. And, you know, Kevin, you can speak to this. That first time you get traded can be a little bit jarring. Mm-hmm. And he got traded to a team in a pennant race. He didn't get traded in December and have spring training to get to know everybody. And I would imagine he came in here, you know, just wanting to prove himself and not knowing what his role was. And I don't know if maybe the whole vaccine thing back then, you know, it's a non-story now, obviously, mm-hmm. but it was a pretty big story a couple of months ago. So, and now he didn't hit at the beginning, and Biggio was going pretty good then, and you had Espinal, and now Merrifield's playing like twice a week. So he kind of had to hit his way into the lineup. If you ask Schneider, he says consistent at-bats. Like, Whit Merrifield's a good player. He led the league in doubles last year. He led the league in stolen bases last year. He's not old. You know, he's 32 or whatever he is, but it's not like he aged 5 years in the last year. He's a good player. So I think it's just, you know, maybe settling in, getting comfortable, playing more, and hitting down in the bottom of the order. There's very little pressure on him. Like, he's not hitting in front of Vladdy or anything like that. I mean, I guess he kind of is, because he's hitting nine and Vladdy's up near the top. But you know what I mean. He's his job is just to get on base. And Buck has said it a dozen times. When Merrifield gives them a different feel, a different energy. The other team has to be on its toes. And he's just doing Whit Merrifield things. You know, one down the left field line, one down the right field line. That play that he made up the middle yesterday when the ball ricocheted off Bichette's glove and he threw him out was a great play.
Yep.
And in my mind, and I love Santiago Espinal, love him. But even if he's healthy enough to come back and play, I think Whit Merrifield's playing second base in game one, and he's playing second base as long as his bat's going pretty well. And, you know, you could see Espinal in defensively late in the game for sure. But, you know, the way Whit's playing, he's got to be in there.
He's a great base runner too. They need that in the playoffs, which is going to help. But I want to ask about the lineup. If Teoscar continues to tear up the baseball, would you hit him clean up and just move Kirky wherever you move Kirky, or would you leave Kirky in the cleanup spot?
Well, I'll tell you this. So Teoscar, when Kirk's in there, Teoscar's been six most of the time.
Yeah.
And Chapman's been five. That, to me, at this point, is an easy flip. And it goes to show you how funny baseball is. And I hope you don't mind me saying this, Kevin.
Nope.
A couple of weeks ago, you asked me if I would sit Teoscar and if Tapia should flip.
Sure.
Like, that's right. And that's the nature of the beast. And we all are like that. We all get caught up when a guy gets hot. We all get caught up when a guy gets cold and all that. But his bat can be a game changer. So I think I'd leave him at five. I think I'd leave Kirk at four. There's something about Kirk's contact ability that I like behind the big boys, because it seems like a lot of times he's up there when contact is going to get you a run. Contact is going to do you some good. So I think they'll leave Kirk at four. You know, he's not swinging the bat quite as well as he did earlier in the year, obviously. And as you well know, you know, things you might think about for a week in the regular season and then make a change,
sure,
you might think about for a day in the playoffs and then make a change, right, because you don't have as much time. So it's a very good thought. I'm sure it's a conversation that they've had. But at the very least, I'd like to see him up to five.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, is this as good as you have seen Bo Bichette at the plate?
I will say there was one other period, and I remember talking to Bo about it. It was in the shortened season in 2020,
mm-hmm.
right before he got hurt. He had a week. It wasn't this long of a stretch. I mean, the whole season wasn't this long, you know. So, but he had a week or 10 days where he was on fire. And I remember talking to him and saying, I've never felt better. And then he got hurt, and he didn't play for about 3 weeks or something like that. But, I haven't, like, dug into the numbers, mm-hmm. but it feels like he's taking more, but he hasn't lost his aggressiveness, if you know what I mean. Like, he's just making really good decisions. He looks like he's up there with a free mind, and maybe that's us, you know, seeing what we see and making it fit our narrative and all that. But, you know, the at-bats seem to be one or two pitches where he's ambushing guys, and if not, they're like eight or nine pitches. And mm-hmm. and you know, then he gets into Bo Bichette two-strike mode, and the battle begins. So he's obviously in a very good place, a really, really good place. When the Yankees were in town, I talked to a few of their people, and they were, like, rolling their eyes like, whoa. You know, for all of the conversation about, what was it, should they walk Vladdy to get to Kirk? Remember when Vladdy won the game with the hit? There were conversations about, should they walk Bo to get to Vladdy?
Yeah.
Like, that tells you something that about how other teams are viewing Bo Bichette. And he's in a great, great spot right now. It's, I don't know that there's been a time this year, like if you go through the regular nine, it feels like six or seven of them are swinging the bats really, really well right now. And it feels like most of the time it's been more like three, four, maybe five. But, you know, what the bottom of the order, also I think what the bottom of the order is doing, whether it's Tapia or Jansen or Merrifield, I don't want to leave anybody out, but that when those guys are on base, imagine being the pitcher and you've got traffic and now you got to deal with Springer, Bichette, and Guerrero. That just makes those three guys even more dangerous.
Dan, how do you grade Matt Chapman's offensive year? He's so up and down. I just don't know how to grade
him. Yeah.
Is it a good year, a bad year, a medium year, okay year? How do you grade his year?
It's interesting because it's better than his year last year, but it's not as good as his 18 or 19. I guess I would say, okay, somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fascinating guy. You know, his exit velocities and all that. He hits the ball as hard as Teoscar and Vladdy do, but he swings and misses more. And he doesn't chase like a Teoscar will. He swings and misses in the zone. And again, I don't know anything about hitting mechanics. So I would say, you know, the power has been a plus. The walks and the number of pitches that he sees have been a plus. But the amount of contact has been a minus. So overall, I would say it's been an okay year. I bet you if you asked him, he wouldn't even get you to okay. I bet you he's tough on himself.
Yeah.
He's hard on himself defensively, if you can believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine what he must be like offensively. But when they got him, I think they knew they weren't going to get Marcus Semien 2021 numbers. Like, that's just not realistic. But they needed him defensively. And as you guys, I'm sure, know, you can go up to any coach or the manager and ask them about Matt Chapman, and you can ask them about anything you want. And within 15 seconds, they'll be telling you about what a leader he is and what a force in the clubhouse he is. And there's no analytic for that, but I think that's pretty important on this group.
Yeah, we're led to believe that the whole post-game thing the Jays go through, the whole pirate thing that they've developed was largely the result of his imagination,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, that for a new guy to come, for a guy to come in and be able to put his imprint on a team like that really does, it says a lot about him. It really does that you can come in and be, have that, an immediate positive impact on a group of guys that have been together for a long time. And, you know, Matt, I mean, he wasn't with this team during COVID, right? So he joined a pretty close-knit group, I think.
Yeah. I mean, they're the young guys who generally are the more, outgoing, fun guys. And then, you know, you've got veterans from other teams, too, right? You've got, obviously, George Springer's a big force, and you've got Gausman and Stripling and et cetera, et cetera. It's a really interesting, diverse group in a lot of different ways. And he didn't walk in at the end of March and announce, hey, I'm Matt and I'm the leader. Like, you've got to earn that.
Mm-hmm.
But I sometimes, as you guys know, when you travel with the team on the road, you see, you know, it's a different, you know, there are fewer media. Mm-hmm. You're around them in smaller groups and that sort of thing. And you can see whether it's Bo, whether it's Biggio, whether it's Vladdy, like they gravitate towards him and he can pump them up and he can remind them of things they need to be reminded of sometimes. So I think he's very important. And if we heard November the 8th, maybe that he's been signed to an extension. He's got one more year.
Mm-hmm.
But if we heard November the 8th that he's been signed to an extension, that wouldn't shock me. That wouldn't shock me at all. I know how highly they think of him.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. Dan, thanks so much for doing this, man. Hey, listen, safe travels and have a great call on ESPN.
Have fun.
And, be well.
Okay, thanks, guys. I will see you soon.
Thank you. Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. He will be calling the Blue Jays series for ESPN Radio. And, of course, he will be part of ESPN's coverage all the way through the 2022 postseason.
I just think it's funny. I think Dan brought this up during the celebration that Chapman was fisheyeing his glove, making sure that no champagne or anything was getting on it, because that's not normal. It's really not. For a guy that hits in the middle of the order, a guy that's got, I mean, he's got 27 big ones. Like, it's not like he's having an awful year. It's normally the bat. Like, everybody wants to hide the bat, make sure nobody touches it or steals. Nobody would ever steal it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you're making sure that that's okay. And it's his glove. I just find that intriguing. Like, that would never be me. I bet that's not Vladdy. I bet that's not Bo. Like, you're always a hitter first. It seems like he's not. It's funny how that is. Yeah. Like, I find that intriguing, and I think that tells you a lot about who he is as a player and a person and what he thinks he brings most to this team. Not maybe not to another team, but to this team.
Yeah, see, I think in a lot of ways, looking back on that deal now, this is he's a perfect fit for this
no
team,
question.
And this team's a perfect fit for him.
No question.
I really believe that. And we talked about this at the start. No expectations for batting average. Give me some doubles. Hit 30 home runs. Mm-hmm. I'm a happy boy. Play the defense you're playing. That's all I need from him.
He needs a trigger. Like, that for me would take him to a whole different level. I mean, he's hitting, what is he hitting? 230.
Yeah.
It's probably went down a little bit, so it's in the 220s. But trigger. Get something started back so you can get better separation. A lot of the times his hands follow his front foot. That's why they pitch him up. He has trouble because his barrel dips below his hands, mm-hmm. because he doesn't have a trigger. Add a trigger. I don't think that's something you can add in season.
Right.
But it could be minor little thing. It could be a bigger hand movement, more waving. It could be a leg kick, something to get your weight on the inside of your back knee so you get a trigger to add separation between your hands. It's the rubber band effect. Everybody that hits, even when you start hitting as a young person, knows what the rubber band effect is. He right now, for me anyway, consistently doesn't have that. And he has tremendous power. He could have more power with a little bit of a trigger.
Danny's right, though. I mean, they've got a lot of contractual decisions to make in the offseason. It wouldn't surprise me if we find out they've added 2 years onto that deal and got him for 3 years. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, no shift.
Wouldn't surprise me
at all. Next year would hurry that up, I think.
Yeah, because he's
going to help.
He's almost, uh-huh. Almost like a human shift without the shift.
He's going to have to hide that hole over there.
Yeah, the ground that he covers is...
It helps.
Yeah. It certainly does.
It does.
John Schneider is the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. He joins us at 11:30. When we come back, we'll take a look around the East. We'll sum up the wild card race for you and maybe talk a little bit about Aaron Judge. Just a bit. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360. And whether it's Apple, whether it's Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast.